Hare Krishna. So we welcome all the special guests and students who have assembled here today. We are very happy to have all of you with us for this Prerna festival, which is every month being hosted jointly by ISKCON Youth Services and Times Foundation. And this is the 23rd in the series of programs we have been having. So today we have a very interesting topic, the principles of satisfaction. Last month we discussed on the topic overcoming greed. So basically, satisfaction is the subject matter which one embraces once one has understood what greed is and one has overcome greed. So today, the first part we will discuss about how to overcome greed and how to increase the level of our satisfaction. And then in the last part, we will see how to apply these principles of satisfaction in our own life. I'll tell an interesting story in this regard. One time, two friends were walking. One was looking very glum, very morose, very sad. So the other friend asked him, "What is the problem? You're looking very sad. Something the matter?" So the first friend said, "Actually, what happened was 3 weeks back, one of my cousins died. And he left behind $50,000 in my name." So the other friend said, "That's interesting." "And then 2 weeks back, one of my grandfathers, he died. And he left behind $80,000 in my name." Another friend said, "My God. And last week, one of my uncles, he died. And he left behind around $1 million in my name." So the friend said, "My God, you are getting so much, then why you are looking so glum?" So the friend said, "This week nothing has happened." So the point is, however much one may get, there is no end to greed. And therefore, let us see how we are going through today's presentation. So you can go ahead. So first we are going to discuss the problems. Then we will have the causes. Then I'll explain some of the solutions. And then we'll see how we can apply. So the problem is comprised of three parts. First is we'll define. Then there are some quotes in this regard. And then we'll discuss the symptoms and consequences of greed. So definition. What is the definition of greed? Excessive desire of acquiring or possessing, especially wishing to possess more than what one needs or desires. So this is a definition of what greed is. Few years back, the ex-president of Philippines was deposed. And the wife of the president, her name was Imelda Marcos, and they found in her wardrobe a pair of 30,000 shoes. And you can imagine, you have only 2 feet. And if you have 30,000 pairs of shoes, what are you going to do with it? And then so many other assets which were much beyond what an ordinary person would normally need. So therefore, each person may have a different way of defining what my needs are. And some of you may say, "You are a sadhu, so you don't need much. So it is very easy for you to say these things." So this may be a subjective issue, but the fact remains that ultimately we have to draw the line somewhere. So excessive desire. And there are some interesting quotes in this regard. First is, "Although gold dust is precious, when it gets into your eyes, it obstructs you. Another is, when it is a question of money, everyone is of the same religion. Right? So there may be so many fights and discussions going on, this religion is better, that religion is better. But many times when it is a question of money, people come together and they are willing to compromise and share things and settle things amicably just because money is involved. Third, God looks at the clean hands, not at the full ones. Too many people miss the silver lining because they are expecting gold. Want is a growing giant whom the coat of have was never large enough to cover. And another interesting saying, generally you must have heard, that when wealth is lost, nothing is lost. Health is lost, something is lost. When character is lost, everything is lost. But in modern times, it has become exactly the opposite. When character is lost, nothing is lost. Health is lost, something is lost. But wealth is lost, everything is lost. So that is the modern paradigm. And another very interesting saying is, a miser isn't much fun to live with. A miser isn't much fun to live with, but he makes a wonderful ancestor. So, what lies behind us and before us are small matters compared to what lies within us. Therefore, here we are talking of a phenomena which all of us are experiencing in our lives, a phenomena of increasing desires, unlimited desires. And therefore the whole law of economics is that there are unlimited desires, but there are only limited assets. And therefore we have to make rules and regulations and laws. So all of you who have assembled here today in this room are desiring peace, are desiring satisfaction, desiring a state of calmness within. And all of us are searching for it from the very beginning of our lives. But very few fortunate ones get the exact clue as to how to obtain that ultimate state of deep, undisturbed peace and satisfaction. And therefore you must know that nothing in this world comes free. You cannot think of anything in this world which comes free. To obtain anything, you have to pay a price. So if you have come here and eager to hear about the principles of satisfaction, then you must know that satisfaction also comes at a price. We have to pay a price for it. And unless we pay a price for it, it is not possible to obtain it. It is not something cheap. Therefore, we have to understand the problem we are dealing with, how individually in our own lives we have to tackle it. What are the causes for this problem? And when you understand the problem and its cause, then you can understand the solution and apply. So let us see the terrible consequences which greed creates in this world. And these are several of them, and we'll go one by one. First is physiological consequences of greed. And these consequences can be seen or symptomized through various activities. And there are many activities through which these symptoms can be seen, but I have just given certain characteristic symptoms, maybe one or two activities which may be symptomatic of this phenomena. So for physiological, I have taken the example of meat eating. Widespread, rampant killing of animals in organized slaughterhouses, so that ultimately one can gratify one's tongue. So this phenomenon of meat eating may be many times considered to be a matter of one's personal choice. But actually, the consequences are severe. And just see, the first consequence of this is death. In the United States, it is described that on an average, in every 45 seconds, one person dies because of heart attack. And out of this, 40% are those who are eating meat, and only 15% are those who are abstaining from meat. Death is a direct consequence. Secondly, disease. There was a very famous actor, his name was James Garner, and he would come in various commercials, and he made once a propaganda which said that if you want real food, then you should have real meat, and it would be splashed all over the place. And then within a couple of years of that advertising campaign, he had to go through quintuple coronary bypass heart surgery. So all the doctors are aware of this fact that too much of meat eating, it increases the rate of disease. And what to speak of the kind of effect and influence it has on the animals. In the United States alone, the statistics show that 5 lakh animals are killed per hour in slaughterhouses in very organized ways. All of our petroleum reserves, they are being depleted because we need fossil fuels to keep running all of these enterprises to slaughter animals. And if the same rate of meat eating continues, then our petroleum reserves will be depleted in a matter of 12 years. Whereas if the whole world turns vegetarian, changes this choice of diet, then the same petroleum reserves can last for another 260 years. So we are living in our own home, but setting fire to our own home. At an individual level, the choice of how I decide to satisfy my tongue, it has widespread consequences. We must be aware of this. Then the third consequence, physiological consequence, is desire. Many times, because the meat, it is lying for some time after being slaughtered, the animal has been slaughtered, so it is decaying. So in order to prevent that meat from decay, they put certain kind of chemicals, and it adds a reddish hue to that meat. But along with that, this chemical also has an influence in creating some kind of addictive tendencies, just like nicotine. When you take nicotine, then it forces you to take it again, and again and again you are hooked on to it. Similarly, these chemicals which are used for keeping the meat fresh, they enhance the desire. So it has a similar addictive effect like tobacco or nicotine or any other such product. And thus we can see that the consequences are that it becomes very difficult for one to come out of this cycle. In fact, a few years back, we had organized a World Congress for Science and Religion in 1986, on the occasion of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's 500 years appearance in this world, and this was at Calcutta. And during that, many scientists from all over the world had come, and they make so many presentations about how science and religion can come together. So many of these presentations are really very, very complicated. I have also attended one in 1997. And factually speaking, unless you are really into science, you can't figure out what exactly is going on. But one good thing about this science congress is the food which is distributed during lunch is one of the best you can ever find. Because they somehow get together and make the best kind of menu. And so many people who attend this conference, they come mainly for that part, because it is so attractive. And then once the lectures start, because it is really high scientific stuff and the lights go dim, then it is ideal conditions. So in fact, after attending, even I am coming from a science background, but even I found it difficult to comprehend what is this going on, because it was really very high level research. So one other devotee friend was asking me, so how did you like this presentation? I said it was good, but only one problem, that I was falling asleep in between. He said that is better. I was getting up in between. That was my condition. But the good thing about this is the food part. And everyone, even the scientists who attend, they love it and they gave really fantastic rating for this. So what happened was, there was one Japanese scientist, and one of our devotee friends, he asked him, so now that this conference is over and now you are going back, so how do you feel, which aspect did you like in our whole organization the best? So he was saying, I liked everything. So he, did you like our food? He said, yes, food was also good. But I am just waiting when I will get back to Japan so that I can eat my favorite fish. Otherwise it has been so difficult for me to stay away from fish for so many days, for the last 5-6 days. And then he said, it is so difficult for me to give this up. I'm just addicted to it. I can't give it up. And so we can see that this has an addictive tendency. So when we are talking about greed, we are going to discuss greed at various levels. If you are talking of satisfaction, you have to discuss about satisfaction at various levels. Do not think it comes in a simple pill formula. You just pop it in and then you attain a state of satisfaction and then you are floating. No. Then we come to the second part, and that is financial. The financial consequences of greed. And one symptom which I have particularly noted down is gambling. And in fact, according to John Skene is a very famous personality in the USA. He is Dr. John Skene. And he has done his PhD in a very interesting subject. And he has done his PhD in gambling. Interesting. Many of you may not be aware that PhDs are offered even in gambling. And so according to his thesis, he made a research and found out that the gambling resources generate 1/3 of the GNP in USA, amounts to about $1 trillion several years back. And according to him, he has founded what is known as the PGRI. So it may sound a very interesting institute, PGRI, that is Public Gambling Research Institute. So there is a complete research institute dedicated for this, to do research on what gambling is and how it happens and what are the consequences on people's mental health, because it affects people. So according to them, 60% of the adults, they indulge in the USA in this kind of gambling and they get severely affected. And so the consequences are many. Number one, dishonesty. Because ultimately the whole principle of gambling is that I want to put less effort and get more money. Minimize effort, maximize profit. So the whole underlying principle is based on massive greed. So therefore people resort to all kinds of dishonest techniques, and they have caught many times people, they are trying to manipulate the balls which are used in all of these games by injecting some liquid or doing some other kind of malpractice. And even in India, recently, all of you are aware of what is known as match fixing, right? Previously, match fixing would mean boy and girl come together and the parents are in match. So they used to call that match fixing. But now if you say match fixing, then it has a totally different connotation. And so many cricketers were found guilty. And then one such cricketer, you know, Hansie Cronje from South Africa. He was one famous person who revolutionized the entire way cricket is played, because he brought in all kinds of new age techniques to analyze games and matches. And he was taking the South Africa team to really high levels of professionalism. But he was caught, and then he admitted. And in his confession he said, "I should have been satisfied with what I was getting. But I was ungrateful and I was greedy. And I have to pay a price for that." And within a couple of years after his confession, after he was banned, he left his body in an air crash. And the newspapers carried just one line mention in one corner, obscure corner of the newspaper, about his departure. Because he had been humble and he had lost his face, lost his honor, because of having succumbed to dishonest means through gambling. Second is contempt. One loses contempt for life itself. There is a story of this Japanese lady, and she was really addicted to gambling. And she was in Las Vegas. She had a residence there, and she was driving her two kids to some park. And on the way, she just saw a casino. And because instinctively she was a gambler, so she became attracted. So she stopped the car, put her two kids to sleep inside the car, and she thought, "I'll just go in and check out and come back." So she left the ignition on, she closed the doors of the car, went inside. But once she started playing, she just lost count of time. And instead of coming back in 2 minutes, she spent 2 full hours playing. And when she came out, she found that her two kids who were inside the car, somehow there was some leakage because the ignition was on and carbon monoxide was coming inside the vehicle. And because the doors were closed and they were sleeping, they were inhaling all of these poisonous gas, and both of her kids died. And in this way, you can see that this can be life-threatening. Another very amazing story, in Las Vegas itself, there is a famous hospital there which is known as Sunrise Hospital. And it was found that routinely critically ill patients were dying. And in spite of the best efforts of the doctors to revive them, they were not surviving, only in this hospital. So an inquiry was conducted, and they found out that there were some nurses who were indulging in gambling. And what they were doing was, they were gambling on the patients' lives. Who will survive more, bed number 3 or bed number 4? And in this way they were placing bets, sometimes worth thousands of dollars. And when the stakes went on increasing, they started resorting to malpractice. So when one nurse would feel that she is going to lose, she would switch off the life support systems and the patient would die. And then they made this inquiry, found out about her, and then she made a confession. And she said, "I call myself the angel of death." And so many people lost their lives. So gambling, it addicts you to the process of making money to such an extent that ultimately there is even contempt for the basic, that is life itself. Thirdly, the crime rate increases like anything. And they have found out that any place where gambling has been made prominent, within a couple of years, the crime rate triples in that area. And there has been found to be a close cohesive network between the gambling casinos and the mafia. And many times the mafia, they are being funded by these gambling casinos to continue their underworld activities and even given interest-free loans. And in this way, a close nexus is established. Third, we can see the corporate consequences of greed, and that is seen in the form of scamming. And this leads to breakdown of economy, and all of you must have heard of how Arthur Anderson and Enron scam. Millions of dollars lost, people's faith destroyed, so many people unemployed, all because of a desire of a few people at the top to make more and more money. Loss of public faith and insecurity. And during this time, when the Enron scam was going on, and it shook the whole world, so they were making huge losses, but in cohesion with their audit firm, they were trying to present as if they're making big profits. People lost trust like anything. And so many, they committed suicide because they just could not take it. And even those who were part of the crime, some of them committed suicide. And at that time, there was one billboard here, seeing the massive kind of crime or the gambling which was going on at this level. There was a billboard I had seen on Marin Drive, and there was a slogan written that India is a college for corruption. In US it is a university. Because it was done at such an organized level and such huge money was siphoned off and embezzled that it is beyond the imagination. So we can see at the corporate level, if greed takes over the leaders, then nothing can be done. Fourth, social influence, social consequence of greed is there is increase in crime. Few years back, the police had raided one of the hideouts of a very infamous gang don in Mumbai. And when they had raided one of his hideouts, they found out to their surprise huge boxes filled with letters. And these were letters which were written by youth from all over Maharashtra. And the letters contained a plea that, "Sir, I have just passed my 10th standard. I want to make a career in crime. Please give me your permission so that I can come and join your gang." So like that, so many letters where the youngsters were seeking blessings and permission, "Please allow us to join your gang so that we can become criminals." And some of them even giving their qualifications, "Already I have started doing pickpocket here. In the last riots which took place, I also participated, destroyed 2 houses. There are some 2-3 police cases already pending. I am sending evidence for that." So like that, the police found out and they were surprised that this is the extent to which the people who have not even begun their career, they are contemplating even in school to become professional criminals. And why do you think this is happening? Because one wants to make quick money, because of greed. This is a direct consequence of that. In fact, one of my friends, recently he became a friend of mine, but he spent his time in the Kolhapur jail. And as you heard Brijbihari Prabhu explaining in the beginning, that I also conduct programs in jails. So I found this person, and he was telling me his own experience when he was in jail. So he was caught in a false case, and some of his business enemies, they put some false case against him of double murder, extortion, kidnapping, and at least 2-3 other things. And then when he was sentenced to jail in Kolhapur, as soon as he entered the jail, before even he had entered the jail, the news had spread that someone is coming with this record, double murder, extortion, this, that. So all the prisoners are waiting expectantly to see who is this great personality. So what is seen in the outside world, the exact opposite is the perception inside. The bigger the criminal, the greater is the respect you get inside. So as soon as he entered the jail, he said he started getting offers from so many gangs. So many people from different gangs were inside and they were making offer letters that our boss wants to speak with you. Our boss wants to speak with you. Come on, join us. A full-fledged recruitment center is going on inside. And some of the gangs leave behind some criminals permanently inside. And they never come out of the jail. Their full-time job is to make recruitment. And he said, you won't believe it, that even innocent people, sometimes because of some small crime, they are caught and put in the jail. But because of this kind of scenario, they get sucked in. Because these gang people, they will come and offer some mobile phone, they will offer some money, they will offer guarantee that we'll take care of your family. And such allurements for a young person who is not so much educated, it is too much. And then ultimately he succumbs. And therefore, he becomes a full-fledged, lifelong criminal. So we can see that crimes increase. And previously we felt that different organs of our body are very safe because they are within. But in Kali Yuga, even that is not safe. Because there are so many rackets all over the world which are caught, that they are stealing kidneys and selling for some price. Even if you get admitted, then you have to be careful. And therefore, this crime racket is increasing day by day all over the world because of this greed factor. And hence, the consequence of this is there is total unrest and chaos in society depending on the kind of crime rate which exists there. Fifth is familial consequence, or at the level of family. At the level of family, we can see that greed results in two things: the problem of dowry in India and in so many other places, divorce. Even before the marriage agreement, there is divorce agreement. That when we divorce, how much you will get, how much I will get. One time, a 90-year-old senator in US, he got married to a 23-year-old girl. And then she was asked, what you are going to get by marrying him? And she said, I am not going to get anything now, but my future is bright. She was very frank about it. So in this way, in India, especially the problem of dowry, and we see that so many families, they are torn apart because of this problem, rather than thinking about a proper stable relationship based on moral principles, spiritual principles. If the relationships are based on commercial factors, then ultimately there is chaos. And then there are rates. For engineer, so many lakh. For doctor, so many lakh. IAS officer, so many lakh. Plus vehicle, plus house, plus this. And in this way, the whole atmosphere is polluted. And it is one of the big problems. And this is all because of a sense of greed. And what does it result in? Social insecurity and personality disorders. Sixth consequence is emotional. Emotional consequence of greed. As I explained before, the symptom of such emotional consequence is seen in the form of dissatisfaction. You are always dissatisfied. Whatever you may get, however much you may make, always you feel totally dissatisfied. And in fact, modern psychologists have presented a new disease in this age, the age of communication and media, a new syndrome, and they call it beautiful people syndrome. And many of you may not have heard this. So this is a recorded fact which has been analyzed and published by the psychologists, and they say, because of the influence of media, everyone is watching television, media, reading news reports continuously, and generally in all such TV programs, they are always showing people who are intelligent, rich, beautiful, well-to-do, and they are successful in life. You will never see in such TV programs someone, you know, sitting and doing wood polish, and then he's explaining how he made it to the railway station and how he got that corner. You will not find people like this. You will always find people who have made it in life, who are rich, who are good looking, and even if they are not good looking, some makeup makes them good looking. So when you are seeing such images continuously, what happens is the media starts influencing our own thinking patterns. So media or television programs are supposed to represent reality which we see in daily life. But exactly the opposite happens. That what images we see in hyper-reality, in the images in the media, start influencing our own expectations and our own thought patterns. And we start thinking that life means it should be like this, as I am seeing in this program. Personal physique, beauty means it should be like this, actor and actress. Income means it should be like this, as they are showing of this hero who made it big. And then people start having the similar expectations in their own lives. And they are moving about, waiting for the day when they can achieve that state. So even if by any standards they make it big in life or improve their situation, but they are always dissatisfied because they are constantly comparing themselves with beautiful people on the media. And therefore they always continue to feel dissatisfied. And many times it is seen that after being bombarded with 4 or 5 hours of TV programs, there is known as a post-TV depression or trauma. That after watching for so long, then a person starts thinking, they are moving around in Mercedes-Benz, they are moving around in their fantastic Ferrari and all these Rolls-Royce and everything, and I am moving around in the local train. Nothing is happening. Life is not moving. Right? Life is not moving fast. Only fast train is moving. I am only moving from slow train to fast train. But I am not going beyond train. When I am going to get all these other things in life? And even if you may become devotee, start chanting, and still if you keep watching, you will start thinking, I am started chanting Hare Krishna, still nothing is happening. Is Krishna hearing? These people don't seem to be chanting. They don't seem to have tilak. But still they are getting all the good things. In spite of chanting, what I am getting to do, I am still chanting in the train. That is all. So therefore it creates a syndrome which is known as beautiful people syndrome. Dissatisfaction. And people are constantly worried. They are hardly ever in the present. They are only contemplating, when I will achieve that state, when I will be like that, constantly worried. Therefore, I quote a famous philosopher who says, worry is like a rocking chair. Rocking chair means, it keeps you moving, but it doesn't get you anywhere. Shraddha Gopinath ji ki. Like, one time a boss called one of his subordinates and said that, now I'm having too much worries on my head and I want to create a new post, and that will be the post of head worrier. His job will be that whatever worries I have, he has to worry about it. And the package will be $60,000 per annum. And the subordinate said, that's great. Said, when I'm going to get my first pay? Boss said, that is your first worry. So as far as worry is concerned, there is no end to it. And and you can never earn anything by worrying. Therefore, we are teaching the process how you can overcome this worry, this anxiety. And it has nothing to do with changing your external environment. It has to do with changing your internal environment. And therefore, these principles are very, very important. Then, political. The political effects, consequences of greed, and that is in the form of corruption. And everyone talks about it. Results in failure of democracy, political uncertainty, and all of you must have read nowadays, recently it was in the newspapers, Telgi scam. Some people estimate up to 1000 crore, 2000 crore, or who knows, for so many years, one decade, so many stamp papers being supplied in society, all fake. And there is a close nexus. And everyone is talking about it, discussing about it, wondering what to do about all this corruption. It is all because of greed. Then ecological consequence. And ecological consequences are severe. And you can go through this whole list, which is quite horrifying in one sense. First is malnutrition. It kills 6 million people per annum. And one of the main causes of malnutrition, according to WHO, is that few countries in the world, they have a surplus and other countries have a deficit. But those who have a surplus, because they want to maintain certain prices in world trade, they throw all their surplus into the ocean. And free aid is not given. And because of this, those who are poor and in need continue in that state. And poor children, they die. So many people, they die. 6 million people per annum. Next is smoking. It kills 3 million people per annum. And practically all governments in the world know the deleterious effects of smoking. But because the kind of moolah you can rake in through cigarette sales, nobody can afford to say no to that. And it becomes very, very difficult, irresistible. And so all they do is put one warning. It is dangerous for health. But the cigarettes go out, people continue to smoke, and they continue to die. Cooking fires. Because of poverty conditions, all over the world, not all people have the luxury of cooking in proper ideal conditions. So they have to make do with whatever fuels they can bring together and whatever cooking space is available. And because of improper conditions for cooking and the fuel used and the burning vessels and everything, there are accidents. And this results in up to deaths of 4 million people. Right? 4 million child deaths per annum. And especially the children. They are with their mothers in the kitchens and in the nearby areas, and this is one of the most common forms of accidents. Then skin cancer. Because of burning of fossil fuel, there is depletion of ozone layer, and 10,000 people, they die every annum. And then chemical exposure, 1 million. Radon. From the earth, a certain kind of radiation comes out, which is natural. But then when you put concrete on the earth, then that radiation, instead of going straight up, gets trapped within, and then gradually it starts permeating within the orifices of the concrete. And then gradually, when the heat increases and the pressure on the concrete increases, it may create explosion. And therefore, radon explosions may sometimes result in killing and up to 16,000 deaths per annum they take place. Water and air pollution. And one statistics I read was unbelievable, and it said in particularly one place in the world, I would not mention the name, because the industries, they pour out all their effluents in the water in that river or ocean, the whole water in that city is kind of polluted, and it leads to deaths of up to 2,000 children. You can imagine. So these are some of the consequences of greed, the various types of effects which uncontrolled, unbridled greed can have, individually, collectively, on society, various countries all over the world. So now we come to the second part, and that is, what is the cause of this greed? And the cause is very simple. First is, what is the origin? According to the Bhagavad Gita, according to Srimad Bhagavatam, the origin of greed is mode of passion. Mode of passion. From the mode of passion, Rajogun, lobha, it develops. Lobha pravrittir arambha karmanam ashamaspruha. So, from mode of passion, lobha or greed develops, and at the very beginning of creation, the greed was created from the lips of Brahma according to classic Vedic theology. Now let us see the dynamics of greed. Just like I discussed in this, the case of anger, first of all there is the enjoyment attitude. The enjoyment attitude means, I feel, I want to enjoy. I want to satisfy myself. And this desire to enjoy myself is also supplemented by the second, that is, egocentric attitude. I feel I can and I have the power to fulfill my desire. So now is the classic case. When your desire is not fulfilled, it results in anger. And when the desire is fulfilled, it results in greed. That means greed is potentially there. When you can't fulfill your desire in the first case, you become angry. But if your desire is fulfilled, do not think it results in satisfaction. It results in further desire. It fuels your desire further. And therefore we come to the third part, and that is the hankering attitude, desiring for more and more and more. And so analogy is given, there's these desires within the heart are like fish. There are unlimited fishes in the ocean, but you cannot see them. You may only see a few fishes jumping out of the ocean once in a while, and you may think that the ocean has very few fishes, but underneath, unlimited fishes are floating by. And therefore the nature of greed is, one wants more. The hankering goes on increasing. Our Radha Gopinath Prabhu, who is one of our temple presidents, he gives a very nice example. When he was in school, they had their cricket team. And so one day when they were playing, they were about to begin their play, and they found that on the cricket pitch there was one small stone, a protrusion. So they decided, if this is there in the middle of the pitch, it is dangerous. So they started attempting to remove that stone. So they removed some mud around, and they found that the stone is little bigger than that. So they started digging little more, and they found that stone is becoming a little more bigger. Started digging, digging and digging, and ultimately dug up the whole pitch. And it was a huge big stone boulder which came out, and they had to bring some other machines to help take that out. And I was saying that desires within our heart are just like that. They appear to be very insignificant. Just something at the surface. And we feel, if I satisfy this much, nothing else. No more problems, right? And many times people come to temple also, and they make deal with God. My dear Lord, I got a long list, but only this top one. Now, in this month. Then others later. So there are so many desires, and we can't even trace them. They are deep rooted within our subconscious. So we may think, when this desire is fulfilled, I will be satisfied. It doesn't happen like that. So the enjoyment attitude leads to the egocentric attitude of feeling I can, and then it gives rise to more hankering. And I want to satisfy myself more and more and more. So what is the solution for this? Let us come to the solution part. And I have covered the solution in two parts. First is, control your greed. And second is, conquer your greed. So control your desires, and control the desires by discussing the disadvantages of accumulating wealth. Bhagavatam says, asankalpa jayat kamam krodham kama vivarjanat arthanartha ikshaya lobham bhayam tattva vamarshanat. So Bhagavatam is giving wonderful formula how you can control different anarthas. Asankalpat jayat kamam and krodham kama vivarjanat. So for kama, by determination, and for lobha, artha anartha ikshaya, by discussing the disadvantages of accumulating wealth. And so in the Bhagavatam it is described, arthasya sadhane siddhe utkarshe rakshane vaye kamopabhoga ayasa trasah chinta matirnam. So we should know that it is the greatest illusion to think that money or some other object can satisfy me, and then that is the end. This is required, and we have to obtain these things, but we should not think that is the be all and end all. There is much more to life than these external possessive mentality. And so this verse says, arthasya sadhane siddhe. When it comes to money, at all levels you will see there are so many problems. Sadhane. Sadhane means at the time of earning, there will be problems. Siddhe. Once we have earned, there will be problems. Just as our Shikshashtakam Prabhu, he told me some nice stories regarding this. And he was saying that once there was a very old couple, and they had put their money on some horse during horse racing. So what happened was, suddenly they found out that the horse on which they had, you know, put their money, it has won. And they got the check in their hand. And as soon as the man, he got this check in his hand, he did not expect that he is going to win such a big lottery. Simply by seeing that amount and the number of zeros, he got a heart attack. And as he got a heart attack, he fell off. And then the check started flying off. And then his wife was in a dilemma, which one to catch. It was flying off in the crowd. So even if we earn, then we should know that unless we take concrete steps to deal with that cause, as I mentioned before, the dynamics part, the hankering will not decrease. It is like an itch. It will continue to bother you and worry you. And no hospital in the world has a cure for this disease. Utkarshe, rakshane, vyaye. If you want to increase it, you want to save it, vyaye. You want to spend it. People are sometimes at their wits' end on how to spend also. There is a billionaires club in the United States. Because they have made their billion, they don't have much to do. And because of that, they have a tendency of going into boredom and depression. So in order to counteract that, what they do is they dress themselves as beggars. And they go out in the streets in the city and beg. And then they come back and they compare who has begged more. And sometimes they put bet also on that. They will bet on $1 million who will beg more. They are going out as beggars, but the old tendency has not gone. And seeing their fancy for this kind of activity, there are many coaching classes which have started, which teaches them how to beg efficiently. And they are willing to pay for that. And this is an example of how, after having so much, you are at your wits' end, wondering what to do with it, how to spend it, so that ultimately I can be satisfied, happy, peaceful. These are mystical words which we only hear, but very fortunate few can experience in their life. No money can buy these things. No property can buy these things. No political power can buy these things. You have to pay a different type of currency to get this. And therefore we are having this seminar so that you can understand what is that most important principle of satisfaction. And so we come to the last part. And that is that application. So the conquer is also similar to that, conquering dissatisfaction by analyzing the effects of dissatisfaction. And now we come to the last part, and that is the application. An application of how we are going to apply this solution. Number one, serve others. We have to develop an attitude of service. This is most important. The modern day paradigm is accumulate, gather, grab more and more. If you cannot do that, you will be miserable. It is not like that. One has to develop the attitude of giving. One time there was one oil merchant, and he was doing all kinds of malpractices in selling his oil. So the king caught him. And the king said, because you have been doing this malpractice, you will ultimately be punished. And the punishment is, we are giving you three choices. Number one, you will be whipped. You will be given 50 whiplashes. Number two, if you cannot do that, then we'll make you drink 5 kilos of ghee. And number three, if you cannot do that, you pay 20,000 coins as some kind of punishment, penalty. So he thought, 20,000 coins, who will give that? And whiplashes, who is going to take that? But ghee, and they are giving me free. And that too, 5 kilos. What kind of a foolish king is this? He thought. So he said, actually I don't mind any punishment, but I would prefer the ghee one. So the king said, fine. So they started pouring ghee into his mouth. 1 kilo went, 2 kilo went. After that finished, he could not take any more. He said, stop it, I can't take any more ghee. So the king said, fine, you can't go ahead with ghee, then you have to go to the second punishment. Give the whiplashes. So they started beating him. 10, 15, 20, 25. He said, too much, I can't take it, I'll die. He said, okay, pay your 20,000. So ultimately he had to pay 20,000 and he had to go through all three punishments. He had been given a choice. So at every moment, we are facing a choice and we are always calculating in what way I should take a decision so that I get more and I don't have to give so much. I gain more, I don't give. So Krishna says to his cowherd boyfriends in the 10th canto of Bhagavatam by showing the trees, Pashyadetan Mahabhagan Parathaikanta Jivitan Vatavarashata Pahiman Sananto Varayantina. My dear friends, just see these trees. Just see the life example of these trees. Pashyadetan Mahabhagan. They are great personalities. Why? Parasyekanta Jivitan. Because they are leading their lives simply for the sake of others. They have dedicated themselves lock, stock and barrel 100% simply for serving others. Parasya aikanta jivitan. There is no other purpose to their life apart from this. And in order to do this, they have to experience so much of suffering also. Vata varsha tapahiman sahanto varayantina. They have to go through heat. They have to stand in the cold winters, rainfall, snowfall, all of it. They are tolerating, but willingly giving their fruits. Patra pushpa phala chaya mula valakala daruvi gandha niryasa bhasmasti tokmai kaman vitanvate. They are giving all of what they have to others. This glorification is coming directly from Krishna. And then he quotes a very interesting verse, which is also quoted by Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And the topic of this verse is secret of success. If you want to be a success in life, all of us are born. And if you feel, I have to make my life successful. How many of you want to make your life successful? Raise your hands. And so Krishna is giving in this verse the success formula. Etavan janma safalyam dehinam iha dehishu pranair arthair dhyavacha shreyah acharanam sada. Etavat janma safalyam. If you want to make your janma safal or successful, then there is only one way. And these are not my words, these are not some other philosopher's words. This is not a subjective individual opinion. This is opinion of the Supreme Absolute Truth. And repeated and ratified by Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Dehinam iha dehishu pranair arthair dhyavacha shreyah acharanam sada. If you utilize four things in the service of others, in the service of society, in the service of mankind and other living beings, then your life is successful. The difference between animal body and human body is, animal body is useful even after death. You can make so many things out of animal body. But human body is useful only when alive. After death, human body is practically useless. Therefore, if you have to make your life successful, then four things, pranair, arthair, dhya, vacha. You have to use your life. Arthair, you have to use your wealth. Dhya, you have to use your intelligence. Vacha, you have to use your words, your sound energy. In what? Shreya acharanam sada. To do good for yourself and to do good for others. By serving others. As one philosopher said, that Life is like a tennis match. You can only hope to win if you serve well. Right? And therefore, tennis match begins with love all. So we have our Shikshashtakam Prabhu who is in charge of our youth preaching. He was previously a tennis player. And so he tells so many stories that how it is so important that you have to focus on your service to get the better edge. Therefore, this entire life will be finished in a moment. So we have to dedicate our lives in such a way that we take care of our body, our economic needs, our social needs, our emotional needs. Nobody is saying that don't make money, don't have family. You do your job, get your money, have a house, have a family, have everything, but have some principles in life by which you know what to do with all these assets. Pranair, Arthair, Dhya, Vacha, all of these resources everyone has at his disposal. Use it for a wonderful cause. Use it for others. And in that, you will get much more in return for yourself. As Prabhupada tells this story, I told in a previous Prerana festival, that there was this beggar who was going from house to house begging. And he came to this lady's house. And he was telling this lady, give me something, bakshish, bakshish. And this lady was in a very notorious mood. She came out and she brought a lot of ash from her sigdi, you know, bhasma. And she put all that rak, that ash in his jholi. And he was holding like this and he saw. And then he said, thank you. I will come again tomorrow. And she said, what is this nonsense? I have just given you so much of ash. Still you are going to come tomorrow. Why you will come tomorrow? And he said, today, at least you have begun the process of giving. Today you are giving ash, tomorrow you will give cash. So what is the problem? So I have faith that you will give. So therefore I am going to come. So Prabhupada in his lecture says that somewhere we have to begin giving. It may even begin by giving some ash. But at least once we get into the habit of giving, ourselves, our energy, our intelligence, our sound vibration, these are things which anyone can do. Shreya acharanam sada. So that is the first. Serve others. Second, avoid mediating. And as I already discussed before, there are severe consequences of this mediating, and hence we have to somehow make sure that we understand the impact. And you will find so many reasons, economic reasons, health reasons, morality reasons, spiritual reasons, why you can take to a better diet. So many books are available, and the vegetarianism movement is growing all over the world. And it is not some secret, something unknown, but it is a well-documented fact. So therefore, if you are trying to satisfy yourself at the expense of someone else's life, how there can be any satisfaction within? Right? You are trying to be peaceful by killing and slaughtering someone. How there can be satisfaction? Is it ever possible? Not possible at all. If a gentleman is standing with his small son, you know, his son is standing with him holding his papa's hand, and you come and meet this gentleman and shake hands with him, hello sir, with one hand you shake hand, with the other hand you give one to that son, talak. Hello sir, how are you? Tap. And he starts crying. Will that father accept the shake hand? Will the father say, your right hand, very good, left hand little naughty? No, is going to be angry with you. So Prabhupada says, if you're talking of world peace, and you're talking about satisfaction, then every living being is a child of God, and we have to make sure that we give proper respect to life itself. Third, train the mind in the principles of satisfaction. Very beautiful verse in Bhagavatam 7th canto, which says, Sada santushta manasa sarva shivamaya disha sharkara kantaka dibhyo yatha pana padam shivam. This verse says, Sada santushta manasa sarva shivamaya disha. One who is satisfied within always, he may travel in any direction, go anywhere, be put in any situation. Sarva dishamaya shivam. He will always see auspiciousness. He will always experience auspiciousness. How? Example is given. Sharkara kantaka dibhyo yatha pana padam shivam. Just like if you walk on the ground barefoot, then you have to be very careful where you walk. If you walk on the wooden floor which is polished, there is no danger. But if you go on the backside of your temple, there is construction going on, and there are small pebbles and even iron pellets, and you have to be very careful because it may enter into your feet. So it disturbs you. So the situation matters when you are walking barefoot. But the feeling of satisfaction is compared to a nice strong sandal or a shoe. A perfect strong shoe which covers a foot. Then you may walk either on pebble, either on thorns, either on sand, either on this polished floor. Yatha panat padam shivam sharkara kantakadibhyo. If you are walking with shoes on, then wherever you may go, whatever surface, you are not affected. So the feeling of satisfaction is like a covering of shoe over the mind. The mind is like a foot, and satisfaction is like a shoe. So when the feeling of satisfaction covers the mind, then nothing can affect the mind. Just as when a shoe is covering the foot, then no external stimuli can affect the foot. So this example is given in the 7th canto. And so I say, train the mind in satisfaction. One has to develop a principle in one's life that I have to increase the level of my satisfaction. As they say, success means to get what you like, and happiness and satisfaction means to like what you get. And therefore, we have to think of a paradigm shift. And this in no way means that we have to lose our ambitions, or we should stop working or stop trying. But we have to understand the importance of this feeling of satisfaction. Fourth is, insulate the intelligence with knowledge. So there is knowledge available in Shastras, knowledge available in Bhagavad Gita, Bhagavatam, which deals with the mind. So if you hear Gita, hear Bhagavatam, hear spiritual knowledge, it insulates you from all of these influences. It bestows upon you a deep feeling of gratitude for the Supreme Lord, and then you feel satisfied for whatever you receive. Unless there is a feeling of gratitude, there cannot be satisfaction. And therefore this is very important. Hearing, studying ancient timeless Vedic wisdom. As they say, the more things change, the more you have to embrace things that do not change. And so the immortal words of Gita and Bhagavatam are as practical and applicable in our lives today And practically every other month I am doing these corporate programs. And modern day managers, managing directors, CEOs, all of them, they are looking for answers, how to overcome anxiety, stress, how to develop satisfaction. There is no end to it. There is no end to these desires. There is no end to this competition. There is no end to this anxiety. Give us solutions. And we are presented to them Bhagavad Gita, Bhagavatam. And they are taking it up, applying in their lives, and applying in their organizations for their employees, and experiencing great benefit. So insulate one's intelligence with this knowledge. Spiritualize your desires. And this is very, very important, because the desires we have right now, just like ice and water, both are made of the same thing, but the form is different. Water can float a ship, but the same water in the form of iceberg can sink the Titanic. Therefore, material desires can sink you, and spiritual desires can keep you afloat. So spiritualize your desires and learn the technique of how to apply everyday desires which you may have in a spiritual dimension. Sixth is F for feast. Feast on Krishna Prasadam. I do not think anyone will have any problem with this. And you may think, how is this connected with satisfaction? So there is a very scientific reason. Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, Ahara Shuddhau Sattva Shuddhi Sattva Shuddhau Dhura Smriti Smriti Lamne Sarva Granthinam Vipra Moksha. When you are getting something from someone, should you not offer your gratitude to him? One disciple asked his guru, one man came and asked the guru, please tell me what is the way of living in this world. So the guru said, you just sit here and observe as I deal with different people. So one person came, one family came carrying a plate of different offerings. There were some sweets, there were some kela, bananas, apple, everything. And there was one cover on top, a cloth cover. So they had brought a pranami offering to this Guruji. So they came, sat down, offered their obeisances to the Guru and kept the plate in front of the Guru. Immediately, the Guru took his chadar, covered himself completely, took the plate inside also, so that nobody could see what was happening, and started eating. And after it finished, pushed the empty plate outside. And the people who had come to meet him, they were shocked. They said, what kind of Guru is this? As soon as we come, before even asking who we are, why we have come, and what was the need to bring all these things, generally people say these things. Without that, he has finished the whole plate. They got up and walked out. So the Guru told that aspiring disciple, go and find out whether they are happy. He came back and said, you are very angry with your behavior. I said, okay, no problem. Next person came. They had also brought one plate. And as soon as they came, they offered their obeisances, said, they told Guruji, we have come to take your blessings. Please give us your blessings. And Guruji also replied to them, thank you for coming. I am so happy that you have come. And as he was speaking, he took one apple and then he just threw it on the back side. And then he took another laddu and threw it on this side. As he was talking, I am very happy that you have come here today. How are your children? I hope you are doing well. And each object was flying on all their sides. And they were thinking, what is going on? And when they went out, they were also dissatisfied. What kind of person is this? We have brought bhet and this is how he is treating it, throwing it in all directions. So the Guru told the disciple, this is also not the right way of leading life. Third person came, he also brought a plate. So Guru first of all took the kela and offered it to the person. Please, you have it. And then he took some other items and then he started distributing to all the others who were sitting in the room. And then he was continuing his conversation. How are you doing? What is your name? How you have come? And then when this party went, they said, we are very happy. So Guru said, this is the way you must lead your life in this world. God is giving us everything. But without offering anything, we just close with a curtain and start gobbling everything. Not acknowledging also what he is giving, how he is giving, how he will be happy. Or there is the other side, those are impersonalists who don't care for God at all. They throw everything away saying, no God, nothing, everything is one. That is also not good. But the best way is, whatever he offers, you offer it back to him. And then you accept the remnants as what is known as prasadam. So if you have a household, you have to eat every day. So then you can make an offering of whatever you cook to the Lord, and the remnants become prasad. Miraculously, by the simple act of honoring prasadam, within a few weeks' time you will see great transformation. Why? Because you are endeavoring to satisfy God, he is satisfying you from within in return. And this is a very important principle of satisfaction, honoring Krishna prasadam. And thus, we come to the last part, and that is yield. That means surrender to the desires of God, submit to God's will. As they say, submission to God's will is the softest pillow to rest on. If you want to ultimately rest and be satisfied and happy, the best pillow is submission to God's will. And in this way, Krishna says in Gita that you surrender by always thinking of me and by offering homage to me, obeisances to me. Like recently I was seeing one poster of Reliance somewhere, surrender to Virinder, you know. So Krishna is also referring in the Bhagavad Gita, you surrender to me. I am offering you everything, giving you everything. So many wonderful products I am giving, your body, energy, everything. Make your life as an offering. And so Krishna in the form of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has appeared in this age and given us the ultimate formula for satisfaction. And that is how we can use the tongue in vibrating his holy names. So you take to this chanting process, chant on a daily basis, and you will see that you are actually satisfying the soul from within. And thus you will feel great peace, great satisfaction, great transformation. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. So this is known as the Hare Krishna Mahamantra, and this Mahamantra has the secret formula for unlocking the treasures of satisfaction and peace. So if you apply these principles of S-A-T-I-S-Y in your life, satisfy, then you will see great transformation and change in your life. And this is the ultimate secret of the principles of satisfaction. I thank you all very much. Hare Krishna.
We'll now have the question answer session. Before that, I'd just like to make a few announcements. I would like to take this opportunity to welcome some very special guests who have graced our temple today evening. We have with us Mrs. Muralidharan. We also have Dr. Dallas, who is the Dean of Government Dental College. The Professor C.V. Sridharan, who is a faculty at Bankers Training College, RBI. And his wife, Mrs. Revati Sridharan, who is a teacher at Adarsh English School, Worli. We have Mr. D.G. Prasad and his wife. Mr. Prasad is the Chief General Manager at Exim Bank. We have Mr. A.M. More, who is the Deputy General Manager at Exim Bank. Thank you. We have Mr. S. Srinivas, who is the Deputy General Manager at Exim Bank. Dr. Mrs. Rajan, who is a cardiologist by profession. We also have Mr. Amar Swami, who has been coming for every Prerana festival, and this Prerana festival is incomplete without his exciting music which he plays on his keyboard. And we also have Dr. Radhakrishna Prabhu, because of whose untiring efforts we have had so many camps in coordination with Times Foundation, and through these camps a lot of young people have immensely benefited. So we would like to welcome all these wonderful guests to Shri Shri Radha Gopinath Mandir in our traditional style by loudly chanting Hari Bol! Hari Bol! Hari Bol! Thank you very much. Now we can have question and answer session. So I will be passing the microphone, so you can please ask your question on the mic.
Hare Krishna Govinda Prabhu, how to spiritualize our desires?
So that's a good question, Ravi Kishore. So how to spiritualize desires? I give the example that material desire is like ice, spiritual desire is like water. One will sometimes make you sink, other will help you float. How do you convert ice to water?
Heating it. By heating it.
Heat it. Therefore, when there is some heat, then it is possible. And that heat is the heat of the association of like-minded people. So when we are in the association of like-minded devotees who are glorifying Krishna, Krishna Surya Sama. So in winter season, when the sun is not seen, the landscape is covered with ice. So when the sun rises and the sun is seen over a period of time, then the ice melts. So Krishna Surya Sama. So when you come within the close range of this heat of service to God and His parts and parcels, then gradually transformation takes place. And this is very, very important. And we must know that any kind of service we do, it ultimately has some effect. I wanted to tell one interesting story, since you just mentioned. I'll just tell you that. This is an interesting story from Scotland about how one gains by serving and one never loses. So one time in a Scottish farmer's field, there was one young boy who was caught in some kind of muck, daldal. So there was muddy field and a muddy patch, and this small boy was caught in that mud and he was getting sucked inside that quicksand. So the farmer came, gave his hand, with great difficulty pulled this boy out. Pulled him out. And somehow this boy was saved. Yashi Shirada Bhaktinath ki jai, Tai Gaur Chandra ki jai, Giridhari Gopal ki jai. So when this boy was saved, his father, he came the next day. The boy stayed the night at this farmer's house. And the boy's father, he came the next day, and he was so happy to see his son alive and doing well. He thanked this farmer and said, "I am so grateful to you, sir. This boy was with me and suddenly he was lost in the forest, and I have been searching all through the night frantically, and I thought that he has died. And now I heard that he was dying in that quicksand and you saved him. I am so grateful to you. I am willing to reward you anything." But this Scottish farmer said, "I did my duty. I do not need any reward." So this rich man said, "But I want to do something. Please allow me to help you and serve you in some way." He said, "No. I did my duty as a service." So this rich man, he was actually a lord from England. He saw that the Scottish farmer had a son, small boy, same age as his own son. So he made a proposal to the farmer that, okay, you're not willing to take any money, let me educate your son. Give your son to me, I will give him the best education and higher education available. So the farmer agreed, okay, if you want to serve in this way, no problem. So the son was taken. And after some years, he went to the Scottish medical school, that farmer's son. And he went to St. Mary's medical school in Scotland. And then this same farmer's son went on to become Alexander Fleming, who invented penicillin. And it so happened that this Lord Randolph, his own son, he was caught with a severe deadly disease in later years. And he was bedridden, the doctor said he's about to die. At that time, Alexander Fleming's penicillin was given to Randolph's son. And when that penicillin was given, he was saved. And then this Lord Randolph's son went on to become Lord Winston Churchill. So these two great personalities, they have their lives so interestingly interwoven based on the principle of mutual service. I found this story very interesting, because many times we may doubt whether we are going to get anything by serving, by helping, by giving. So you never know how you will be benefited, when, in what form, in what way. Therefore, the beginning of spiritualizing your desires is to at least be convinced that I have to start making some serious changes in my thought patterns. From I-centered, my-centered, to giving to others. So rather than taking, let me develop principles of giving and distributing. Like that. So that is most important. And then gradually when you come in association many things happen, transformation takes place automatically. Any other question? Yeah?
Hare Krishna. How should I advise my friends that avoid meat eating? They go on arguing like, you know, that is also a given by God. How should I give them advice?
They say that is also given by God.
Yeah.
So we should eat.
Yes. So how should I say them in a right way?
So many things are given by God. Stool and urine is also given by God. So many poisons and toxic substances are given by God. So those who want to argue, there is no end to it. First is, you must be convinced. And then you must start practicing. And then gradually by seeing your transformation, others will also benefit. One thing you can do is give them prasad, and gradually transformation will take place. Okay? Any other question? You say eating meat is sinful, plants and vegetables are living beings. So vegetarian food is not sinful. I just made the point that when we are offering food, then all those sinful reactions are taken away. Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, Patram Pushpam Phalam Toyam Yo Me Bhaktya Prayachati. Offer to me with love and devotion. And therefore the prasadam, it does not have the negative effects. Does not have the negative karmic effects. And the ultimate proof of this is, you have to actually follow it in your lives. And then you will see. Because if you are sick and the doctor wants to convince you to take a medicine, there is a limit to which the doctor can describe the glories of the medicine. After a certain stage, you have to only take that medicine. Right? So if you are having malaria and the doctor shows you chloroquine, Doctor, why chloroquine? And because it has such and such properties. Okay, why it is like that? Yeah, because in the medical journals it is said. But why for malaria, why you are giving this? Said, okay, malaria is caused like this, like that. This is how it acts and this is how... Okay, but why you are giving me chloroquine? I mean, now you at least try and see once and see the effect. And then you can understand. Are you sure it is chloroquine only? You are showing me this white tablet. How can I be sure? So if you do not want to take a certain medicine, the arguments can go on endlessly. Okay? So you have to stop at some point. If you are standing at your Grand Road station waiting for a train and you ask, is this train going to Virar? Well, yeah. Are you sure? Yeah. See the indicator. It is written V. V could mean so many things. It could be victory. It could mean victor. Could mean so many things. How do you know that V is Virar only? You say, okay, thank you. You stand here, I am going. He'll go. Nobody is going to make a presentation to show how that V means Virar only. If you have to catch your train and meet your appointment and be in office on time, then you have, and if you go to office 2 hours late and the boss says, why you were late? I said, actually I was having an argument about V. And the boss will say, we are not convinced. Better you start following on time. So next day, immediately, as soon as you see, you know, okay, that is Virar. So many times when we do not see any practical use of something in our lives, the best way is to go on arguing. But when you want some effect, some change, some influence, you are willing to accept. Even if every detail is not known. Okay? Any other question? Yeah.
Hare Krishna.
Ready? Samaj, ready? You can come. Yeah.
Does atheism encourage greed?
Sorry?
Does atheism encourage greed?
Atheism. Yes, definitely.
So how to satisfy such type of people?
So make them theists.
But they are not willing to be.
Well, we were also not willing to be initially. So if you and me could become favorable, anyone can become favorable. Right? When we were born, we were not graduates. Right? Everyone is born illiterate only. How many here were born with a PhD? How many are born, as soon as they were born at the age of 3, the first thing they spoke was hippopotamus. How many people's first word was that? Huh? No. So gradually, we start learning. A, B, C, D. So everyone has gone through the education process. Atheist means illiterate about God. So if we were also illiterate, now we are literate, now you are graduate? Huh?
Seeking.
You are studying. Which college?
RSU Chiklun.
Yeah, so you are studying in a college now. When you are born, you are not studying in a college. So gradually over a period of time, you have come to a stage where you are getting education. Similarly, atheist means they are spiritually not so literate, not so knowledgeable because of so many reasons. They can be educated. So we are in the process of educating society. Okay?
Some people say that they are being frustrated after being spiritual.
Okay.
So how can we answer them?
So you should tell them that they should try to follow the right process, then they can get the proper benefit. Just because something wrong happens somewhere doesn't mean you leave the thing. Right? You travel by train, so many train accidents take place, why you travel by train? So many road accidents take place, why you go by road? So many buildings fall, why you are sitting in this building? There is no end. So many food poisoning cases happen, still we eat. So many marriages break up. Still you get married. It is going on, right? So, there will always be some problem somewhere. But that doesn't mean that you throw away the principle. So you try to understand the correct procedure and practice in your life. So now we are scheduled for the drama. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna. Before the drama, we would like to make a few announcements. First of all, we would like to express our heartfelt gratitude to Gauranga Prabhu for such an enlightening presentation. It was actually an eye-opener, very systematic presentation, revealing many aspects and facets of greed and how to control it. So let us express our thanks to Gauranga Prabhu. The Lord is chanting, Hari Bol! Hari Bol! Also, we are announcing the date for the next Prerna Festival. The 24th Prerna Festival will be held on the 26th of June, Saturday. That is the next month. And also, many devotees are aware that the Yatra dates for Chitrakoot, Banaras and Prayag have already been announced. That is from 19th June. And many devotees have registered for this Yatra, and some devotees and students might have some queries regarding the Yatra. So we have a team of devotees downstairs who will answer your queries and doubts. Also, we have a book table downstairs. Many books published by ISKCON as well as ISKCON News Services, they have been put on display. You can go through them. And after this drama, immediately there will be a very exciting kirtan. So we invite all the students to participate in this kirtan very enthusiastically. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Can somebody return the microphone? We need it for the drama.
Hare Krishna.
Kursi.
भजन उसके बाद पैसा